clinch next week a spot in the SEC championship game. Another record-setting night for Joe Burrow, in which he went by Rohan Davies' single-season passing yardage mark. Another big night for Ja'Marr Chase with three more touchdowns, 227 yards through the air, and now becomes LSU's all-time leader in touchdown catches in a season. Justin Jefferson, who added 112 yards and two touchdowns, with his combination with Chase, they now become the most prolific duo in a single season in LSU history. And another big night for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who just did miss 200 yards worth of total offense. Still, Richard, a game that started out LSU moving the ball at will, 31-7 at the half. LSU with everything really in hand. And in the second half, the Ole Miss rushing attack, led by John Rhys Plumlee, went to work and absolutely scorched earth on the LSU defense. Plumlee set a record for rushing by an Ole Miss quarterback, 212 yards, 402 yards of rushing yardage for Ole Miss tonight, 614 yards of total offense for Ole Miss tonight, and it wasn't anything that they did that was particularly unique. These are the things that they've been doing all year. And Plumlee, who we talked about this during the scoreboard show, has gone for over 100 yards against Alabama, gone for over 100 yards against Mizzou and Vandy, nearly 100 yards against a very good Auburn defense. But tonight, LSU had no answer for him. And while it never felt like LSU was going to lose the game, things got sticky in the second half.
Well, it definitely got closer than we expected, and it just seemed like time after time, and Plumlee was busting a 30-plus yard touchdown. And when you do that multiple drives in a row, you're sitting there thinking, why can't we stop the quarterback? And it's nothing new. We knew it's RPO games, I mean, in the way he's playing. But, man, I think his speed surprised everybody.
I thought he was not nearly that fast. I've watched him play a number of times, especially the Alabama game. I thought he was tough. I know he's a terrific athlete. He's a baseball player as well. He'll be a starting outfielder for Ole Miss. But I did not think he had that level of speed. That was my mistake.
Shoulder to shoulder with anybody, he pulls away.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the fastest guy on the field is what it looked like.
He did that a lot tonight. Let's bring in Gordy Rush, who was on the sideline tonight, for his viewpoint on it. Gordy, could he outrun you in your prime?
Oh, hell yeah. No doubt about it. Jeez.
What did you see tonight?
Well, you know, all the above, I think what you said. I saw what I thought was a real undisciplined effort defensively in the second half, and that, you know, the inside out players were not playing their technique, were overrunning just about everything. There were times that the contain people lost contain. Houston was 1-7 at half. When you ran out in the second half, it dropped. You know, you could feel the difference, and you looked up in the student section, and 70% of the student section went to the bars or went to the Grove, and I got a little bit of complacent. And give Rich Rod props. He's turned Ole Miss into what he had up in West Virginia with White and Slayton and guys, and they're pain in the butt to prepare for in 1 week, you know, and having to break off what you do normally and play against all these guys, Charlie, and play responsibility football, and LSU lost their focus, and we just weren't.
All right, Musa, let's see if we can put him on hold here and get him back. Gordy is driving back, so he's
in Mississippi. He's in some rural areas right now.
I'm not. I'm not saying anything about Mississippi cell phones. Your mom got mad at me. got mad at me the last time. Let's see if we can bring him back up here in just a second. What was surprising to me is in the past when LSU has had problems against the run or just given up too many yards, period, we have been able to pinpoint maybe poor tackling.
Yeah.
That's something that we harp on a lot. Maybe there were some exceptional performances on the other side. We talked about that against Texas. We talked about that against Alabama. Tonight, it just seemed like they got blocked.
Yeah, and to me, what Gordy was talking about, it seemed undisciplined. And that makes a lot of sense. I hadn't gone to that point of really looking at it, but I remember looking at plays, and when the quarterback is pulling, there's only one guy for the quarterback. And it didn't seem like there was a guy for each player, the way that the way you're trained to play against that style of offense. And it's guys just not reading their keys. It was guys biting, going 4% on the run, or they weren't reading that one guy had pitch, one guy had cue, one guy had, you know, the pass. I mean, it just seemed like it was more undisciplined than anything.
When you get an option quarterback that's as good as he is, my thing has always been bury the guy. You know, if you got one guy out there, make sure you tackle him.
You said it multiple times tonight. Like, tackle him.
Yeah. Don't start guessing. If Ealy beats you and runs up 200 yards, so be it. But if you're going to run your quarterback out there and I've got a chance to tackle him.
Exactly.
I'm going to tackle him, and I'm going to tackle him as hard as I can. I'm not dirty. I'm talking about just hit him.
Wear the quarterback down. Yes. Always hit the quarterback.
And I didn't feel like they did that. There's nothing that aggravates me more than teams that try to play against the option and the guy tries to slow play until he makes a pitch and then skate down the line and make the tackle, because very few people can do that.
Yeah.
And what happens more often than not is you don't take either. And I thought that happened tonight.
I seem like that's what happened all night long. It was always one guy trying to play two, and it never works out. Like you said, you end up having a guy that wastes a lot of time doing nothing instead of at least getting aggressive hits on the quarterback and wearing him down.
If you're going to play assignment football against something like this, then you need enough people to cover their assignments. It's not that guys were sliding past or missing tackles. They weren't there.
Yeah.
The guy was getting blocked on the interior. There was one particular play where Rashard Lawrence is out there with nothing but a smile on his face and his number trying to play two people. And what's he supposed to do at that stage?
I mean, and that's what we're talking about. We said earlier in the show there was over 400 yards rushing tonight, and I think I'm being generous when I say 250 were untouched. It seemed like there could have been more. I mean, there were just opportunities where they hit the gap and there was no one around.
You're from Mississippi. You know John Bond? Does your dad know John Bond?
My dad might. I don't know.
I felt like I was watching John Bond tonight. John Bond, older LSU fans will remember John Bond as a quarterback for Mississippi State who ran for literally 14,000 yards in 4 years against LSU. I felt like I was watching him tonight. Gordy, you're old enough to remember John Bond, I know. There were times tonight where watching Plumlee, it just seemed like there weren't enough guys out there to make a play, and LSU spent a lot of the night getting blocked.
Yeah, great point. I mentioned on the broadcast that the DBs and lines, the perimeter people, really struggled to get off blocks. So Ole Miss's wide receivers did a great job of engaging and chop blocking the edge people. And another thing from field level, all these guys are 5'11 and shorter. Whether it was Snoop or Ealy, and so you could, from field level, it was hard for, I think, LSU's defense to find these guys. I'm not trying to make excuses. But you know, the large part of it, again, I thought LSU was really undisciplined in their responsibilities in the second half and just disappointing performance.
Okay. We talked about this a little bit with Hester. I'll get your take on this. Bad as it was defensively in the second half tonight, this is a unique offense in that LSU's not going to see this particular schematics again, and they're certainly not going to see a quarterback that's got Plumlee's speed again. So
right.
this becomes a one-off, or is it something more?
Well, no, I think you're going to play A&M, and you're going to potentially play Justin Fields in Ohio State. I think you got to clean some of it up, right? But to your point, this is why I think Ole Miss, they're on to something. You know, Matt Luke can keep Rich Rod around. It's a pain in the butt to prepare for this offense on 1 week, you know, with 1 week's notice. I don't care that you put Jonte Kirkland out there. It is out of the norm from what you normally do. And you could tell when Corral got on the field, and granted that they had the one broken play and what have you. And, you know, you get LSU into that environment, they're just fine. But when they play this type of offense and the way that they struggled, it was messy, and I'll give Ole Miss credit. I think Rich Rod's done a tremendous job with four small, undersized freshmen that probably a lot of people didn't want because of their size, but they certainly play with a lot of heart and speed.
Gordy, how much of it do you think is a focus letdown? Because in the first half, we didn't have these issues. The defense really played assignment keys. It seemed like they were having to put Matt Corral back in because the gimmicks they wanted to do with Plumlee right. weren't working, but all of a sudden they come out in the second half and it just seems like the focus isn't there.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, Richard. You know, I think they came out, to me, the temperature dropped. And, you know, and what I'm most concerned about in games like this is that LSU got up 31-7, and I'll tell you, 70% of the student section left, went back to the Grove or they hit the bar room. And, you know, and probably another quarter of the, you know, the Ole Miss fans left. And so it took whatever buzz was in the stadium. It took it right out. And so, yeah, you worry about that. And I've always told you, Charlie, what I worry about is going into the stadium when you're used to playing in front of noise and the noise goes away and how you react to it. You know, that being said, you know, from field level, time after time, LSU linebackers just on first motion, they're just flying out of there instead of playing inside out on the quarterback or inside out on the running back. And there were so many times in which Ole Miss used counters and LSU, it was, you know, everybody, three or four defenders just absolutely overran the thing.
On the positive side, LSU running up over 700 yards of total offense. Joe Burrow got within shouting distance of Rohan Davies' individual game passing performance, coming up just a little bit shy of 500 yards in this game. Ja'Marr Chase huge, Jefferson huge, Edwards-Helaire huge. The scouting report held up on the other side, which was this was the worst pass defense in the Southeastern Conference. And outside of a couple of uncharacteristic bad reads from Burrow in the second half, there wasn't a whole lot not to like on the offensive side.
No, there was. You know, I mean, Ole Miss had to play coverage. You know, I thought the game plan was solid and not, you know, not die a quick death. I think they looked at some of the Auburn film and probably rushed three or four more times than not. Of course, you got to mix it up a little bit. I was really impressed with the game plan and what they tried to get done. They just didn't have the Jims and Joes to do it. And so I thought LSU was really patient in their approach and you know, took what the defense gave them. But, again, what's not to like? 58 points, two interceptions, with the missed field goal, right, and two field goals, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, this game could have been in the 70s.
Give me your read before we let you go on Matt Luke. I before the season, if you had asked me, you'd laid out the way that the Arkansas season has gone, the way the Ole Miss season has gone. I would have told you that Arkansas would have played a season like Ole Miss has, with some positive things to build on and a little bit of momentum, and you're feeling pretty good about your coach, and the bottom fell out on Arkansas. I would have said, well, maybe that'll happen on Ole Miss, and it's been just the opposite. I think Matt Luke's earned himself, you know, some more time to look at this thing and is put a pretty good foot forward here.
Well, yeah, no, I'm 100% with you with that. You know, I thought, you know, 75% chance that Luke was out the door. And he very well may finish 4-8, although I probably jump on them to beat Mississippi State and Starkville next Thursday. Here's the problem. Well, first off, they still don't have an AD, and they got to solve all that. But if I'm coming in, and if I'm the AD and I look at that situation, I've got all this freshman personnel that is fantastic. As I mentioned with Rich Rodriguez, you have something with Rich Rod in there. You have something that's really unique, that's something that's different. And at Ole Miss and Arkansas and these schools like that, I think you have to do something unique because you're not going to be able to out LSU or out Alabama and do the things that they do. And look, Mike McIntyre has done a better job with this defense. They were ranked 40th coming to the game. I know, obviously, you know, they gave up 58 points and what have you, but I think that's more, you know, personnel-wise, the scheme is more solid. They're playing a 3-4. I like the group if you can keep them. And so if you get Luke, who's a good recruiter, and you let these two coordinators do their thing, it's a better picture than what Mississippi State's got. It's a better picture than what Arkansas's got. And there's a lot to like if you're an Ole Miss fan. So I'm definitely come back for another year and give it a chance to pan out.
Gordy, have a safe trip back. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right. You've heard from us. We want to hear from you. 499-9898 is the number to call on the Hooters hotline. Reaction tonight to LSU's 58-37 win over Ole Miss. This is Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
Tigers win it tonight 58-37 in Oxford. 499-9898 is the number on the Hooters hotline. Jonathan in Baton Rouge starts us off. Jonathan, welcome into the show.
Yes, sir. I want to ask a question, and I want to make a statement to you. What happened to the defense?
They played lousy in the second half.
Okay. Now, if you watch the game and you saw as many players that was flat-footed as they were out there tonight, that tells me one thing. That tells me that coaching is the problem.
Was coaching the problem last week?
The right alignment.
Was coaching the problem last week? I'm just curious.
Well, the coaching on defense haven't been up to par at all this year, if you really want to say that.
In the first half of the game, you're winning 31-7. I feel like everybody played, you know, up to par in the first half.
Well, one of those plays, Ole Miss should have had a touchdown.
Should have.
It was just a drop ball. But the defense is these kids are not being put in the right places, man. And you might as well admit it. We are talking about them not playing defense, but we're not talking the reason why they're not playing defense.
Well,
have to coach defense, too, just like you coach offense.
Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate it. Nobody's going to say they played well on defense tonight in the second half. Nobody's going to say that they haven't given up more yards and more points than we're comfortable with, okay? I'm concerned tonight that they got blocked, okay?
Yeah.
There were missed tackles, to be sure.
To the caller's point, and there is some coaching to it, because you're saying blocked, but I'm saying that guys weren't even there. Guys weren't even making the right reads. When you're having a quarterback run off in an option to the right side of the field and you have one guy to make the play, the numbers aren't there. They were outnumbered. And I think that's an adjustment they made at halftime. They knew that where they saw they had numbers and that they weren't going to be able to cover the pitch or cover the dive or cover the quarterback. But, I mean, I also think that there's coaching. I think that the adjustments were made. The players didn't make the plays.
I'd almost rather they get blocked than get out schemed.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot easier to fix a guy getting off a block than it is to say your scheme ain't sound.
Well, to me, it's not necessarily scheme. It's just guys didn't read their keys. Guys were not in the right position.
Well, then you agree with the caller that they weren't coached very well this week.
I think it points this. I'm not going to say they weren't coached very well. I'm not going that far. I think that because you watched the first half, they didn't run anything really different in the first half. They played well. I think the focus wasn't there in the second half.
On this point, we wholeheartedly agree. Ron is in Baton Rouge. Ron, welcome into the show.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm perturbed with the defense also. I think they were out-schemed. Look, this is not the first time I've noticed stuff like that. Last week, they had somebody down 3rd and 19 to go. Instead of blitzing, they gave him all day long to make the 19 yards. To me, that's not the right kind of defense we ought to be doing.
No, I mean, you got a point. I feel like last week there were the third downs that were gained. We kept them under 50% third down, but I think they had a 3rd and 12, a 3rd and 9, a 3rd and 17. Plays were made. I'm still in the camp that Dave Aranda is having to play a different style of defense than he's ever played before. He's played with, you know, more of a run-heavy offense in the past. This time you're trying not to put players out of bad positions, but there's things to get better on. This week I think it's more of just you're up 31-7 at half. People are ready to go home. You had a big emotional week the week before, and there was just a letdown physically and emotionally in the second half.
The problem is, you know, the scores these teams are running up on us. We never had that before.
We've never scored like this before either.
Yeah.
That's right. We don't know if we can score like this next year.
Well, next year the defense, I would hope, would be better. Yeah, thank you.
I sure would hope so.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. What he's saying is, and Ron has called the show for a long time. LSU's not used to winning games 58-37. I don't know if anybody's used to winning games 58-37 in the Southeastern Conference.
LSU's not used to having 700 yards of offense, 58 points, five touchdown passes by a quarterback. I mean, it's a completely different style. And that's what I think everybody has not gotten onto yet is you go look at where these offenses have been ran in the past in the Big 12, it's always said, well, Big 12 has bad defense. Yeah, it's, there's something to say about that, but it's also when you were scoring this fast, when you were being on, you were giving the other team this many opportunities to be on the field, more points are going to be scored. I'm not worried about the points as much as I'm worried about the amount of rushing yards that were given up, the amount of times where the quarterback ran 50 yards down the field without being touched.
In 2000, let me pick a random year, not 11, that was a different team. 2013, 2015 maybe, 2004, LSU might have won this game 34-13. That would have been a reasonable score.
Yeah.
That LSU would have gone if you have
that would have been a butt whipping score for
34-13 was that was if LSU was three touchdowns better than Ole Miss like they were tonight, 34-13 is 31-10 something yeah. like that. We're used to games like that, seeing games like that. Ask for a better offense. We got one. There's some collateral damage that goes along with that.
Go find another offense that is scoring 50 points a game, and they're not, I mean, other than, I guess, Ohio State, because they're kind of doing it right now, but I don't think the competition's equal.
Well, they played Rutgers today.
Yeah.
You give up 600 yards, and your opponent scores 37 points, and you score 27 points. Now we got a problem.
Yeah.
This was a problem tonight.
It is a problem. I'm not trying to hide from
No, that. I know you're not. I'm actually with you. At halftime, everybody was done.
They were ready to go home. They were talking about, you know, what's going on.
We were done.
Yeah.
We're sitting here. We're watching the game.
I was done. I was about ready to take a nap.
We're watching Oklahoma and Baylor out of the side of, you know, on the other TV. We're watching what other game was on? The Louisville was on. We're watching that.
We're looking for any other close game.
Yeah. Ole Miss scored again. All right. Okay. How much time's left? Okay. You know, what are we looking at start time? Luckily, we're blessed in here in that we have Musso to be nervous enough for everybody, okay? So that we never have to worry that the things are getting too far out of hand. Musso said, gets real worked up. So we're on guard. 499-9898 is the number to call. Charlie is in Lafayette. Charlie, welcome into the show.
Hey, Charlie, how you doing?
Good.
I always like listening to you and Richard. Y'all are usually the voice of reason and logic. When people call in, so you generally nail it about 99.9% of the time. The defense was sloppy, and I think a lot of us lose focus when you get up like that and you're scoring like that. You know, I mean, look, if you don't have the interceptions by Burrow, two of them, one of them, LSU probably scores in the 60s, and Ole Miss probably doesn't get a touchdown in the 30s, and if LSU kicks field, I'm not that concerned. You know, and the thing I'm most happy about, LSU's quarterback is still healthy. Alabama's quarterback is the LSU's quarterback. LSU's season wasn't altered today. They got what they got done. They'll correct it. They'll beat the tar out of Arkansas, and they're going to beat old Texas A&M pretty soundly. It's you accept the win, move on, you know, not worry about all this, worry about all this stuff, because this stuff is going to change. By the time they get to the SEC title game, by the time they get to the playoffs, it's going to be different, and they're going to have a different focus, you know, going in there today. The best thing that could have happened to them today, they win in the game. The other thing that could have happened was Georgia beating Auburn, and you have, you know, some of the other things that are happening today, so I think that they're not going to have to worry about Alabama, and I'm sick about what happened to Tua. I think Saban, like Matt Mark, Saban, that was ridiculous, stupid, you know. But
all right, Charlie. Thank you. We're up against the break. I appreciate you calling. One of the things he said, LSU's quarterback is healthy. I don't think I've ever seen so much chatter about how fast can you get Joe Burrow out of the game. I'm talking about before the game.
It started early today.
Yeah, before the game even started, and it's a direct product of what happened with Tua today.
You heard the announcers on ESPN, especially following the Alabama game, they're all sitting there saying, well, when are they going to pull Burrow?
Yeah, and I didn't watch Ohio State today. I didn't watch Clemson and Wake Forest. Both of those teams won big. I assume that Fields and Lawrence got out of the game at some point, but I don't know when. But you got to think that everybody in the world was watching that thing today and going, man, we want our quarterback, especially when the guy's going to win the Heisman Trophy here in a few weeks.
But, yeah. You know, and I get that from a player standpoint.
You can't think like that.
You can feel that from the first snap of the ball game. I mean, you can't worry about a guy getting hurt. I mean, no. You have that opportunity to get hurt on every play of the game. And, yeah, you want to get the big lead and get him out. But, I mean, that's still the game.
That's the part of Saban's reaction that I think is going to be most misunderstood. When he said, I don't worry about guys getting hurt.
And I understand it completely. Like,
I do, too. It's going to be interpreted as I don't care about my guys getting hurt.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's, hey, once you're playing the game, just like you said, look.
You can get hurt on the first play of the game.
Yes, very much so. But out of context, it's going to be taken the other way. 499-9898 is the number to call. This is Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
LSU wins at 58-37 tonight. 499-9898 is the number to call on the Hooters hotline. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jack is in Texas. Jack, welcome into the show.
Hey, Charlie. How are you tonight?
Good, Jack.
Did Patrick play tonight? I do not remember Patrick playing.
Patrick Queen?
Queen, yeah.
Yeah, he was out there tonight.
Yeah, he had.
Was he? Okay, I guess I just, you know, because he's normally our best sideline-to-sideline linebacker. And I remember Jacob making several tackles and some misses, you know. But
Queen had 9 assists tonight and 0 solos, which is a strange line. Yeah. And it leads you to believe that when we go back and look at the film, I got a pretty good idea that a lot of those tackles are going to be down the field.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just got to thinking about that while I was listening to y'all, and I went, I don't remember Patrick having his typical night.
There's a lot of guys on that defensive side that could say that in the second half, Jack.
You're right there, no doubt.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. 499-9898 on the Hooters Hotline. Jules is in Abbeville. Jules, welcome into the show.
Good evening, fellas.
Good evening, Jules.
25 turnovers. Oh, wait, that was basketball tonight. Charles, Richard, do y'all think that there's something different that Aranda did in the off season, or like in the summer camp right before the season started, as far as the defense goes, based on the fact that maybe he figured LSU was going to be able to score a lot of points?
There's no question.
On offense this year?
Yeah, there's no question. Me and Flynn talked about it a lot over the past couple of weeks, and he is definitely running more zone than you've ever seen LSU run. And you do that because the way that the offense is scoring – It takes way more energy to play man defense. You're running over, you know, all up and down the field, and he knows that the way the offense is scoring, you play zone is a little bit more of a rest for your defense, and I think that's what he's tried to adjust to this year.
And do you think that that has had anything to do with the number of points that some of our opposition has scored?
Yeah, and I think that it also has the reasoning behind it is because we're scoring so often, you're allowed to give up more points. It's more about maintaining than versus just shutting them down the entire game.
Well, okay, it's certainly a different defense from what we're used to, but winning is the most important thing, so I'm happy about that, and if that's what it takes, so be it.
Thank you, Jules. The other thing about the zone, if you sat down and you looked at LSU's schedule back in the summer, Sam Ellinger, quarterback that can hurt you running, Bo Nix, quarterback that can hurt you running. This is probably a bad time to bring this up. Tua, a quarterback that is certainly an elite passer but can hurt you with his legs. We saw what happened tonight. We knew that Mississippi State was bringing in Tommy Stevens. It's ended up being Schrader as often as not. Point being that you take defensive backs, they turn around, they run man to man, they're back to the, you know, back to the line of scrimmage, and these quarterbacks take off. And I wonder if that didn't play into it as much as anything.
I think that has something to do with it, but the more me and Matt and Jacob, we've all sat down and talked about it, it is also a different way of resting defensive players. I mean, if you're going to be on the field that often and you're going to have to, your offense is scoring that fast, putting you back on the field, you don't want them running all up and down the field, chasing everybody from play to play. It's a way that you can still play sound defense. And it's more of a bend, don't break style. And it lets you, your guys have opportunities to rest.
There's a counter argument to that, that with Fulton and Stingley, you've got two elite cover guys, and you should just stick them on the two best receivers on the other side.
You can do that, but then you've still got linebackers playing man on a running back and burning themselves down. I mean, you can't change your offense, your defense for two players. Those two players can play. You can play a zone, a matchup zone where you're still pressing and covering man to man for a depth per set, for 10 yards or for 15 yards, but for a style of the whole defense, it's a concept that lets everybody rest a little bit.
Howard is in Marksville. Howard, welcome into the show.
Hey, you joined me, taking my call.
Okay.
I have an observation to make and a trivia question. I really appreciate that there is still a place for the little man in football, namely Clyde Edwards. It was good to see him run like that. Even though he's so small in stature, he's still got guts and he's tough.
He does.
In 1966, LSU went to the Cotton Bowl and knocked off Arkansas. We had a running back. It was small, diminutive at that time, 5'9", 150 pounds. He wore number 22, and he was from the Rose Cutoff. Who is he?
Oh, wait a second.
It's a Charlie question for
no,
sure.
No, I got it. It's on the tip of my tongue. Give me a second. Oh, man. Do you know it? You're just holding it out on me? Are you?
Joe
Labruzzo. Yeah, I had it was on the tip of my tongue. Yeah. It was on the tip of my tongue.
He was only five, nine.
Yeah, I you know, that was before I was born, but I've heard so much about that game, and Joe Labruzzo has been one of those kind of folk legends in LSU football. Howard, thank you for the call, and of course I went brain dead there for a second. I'm trying to remember names, but yes, I have heard all of the stories about
Clyde
that
Edwards
game.
Helaire has made himself so much money this year. I mean, he is the new age running back, what they want in the NFL. It's a guy that can do everything as far as line up in the slot. He's a pass protector. He catches the ball well. He runs well. It's a different day and age. I mean, he's the type of running back that you see featured more in NFL games.
The more I watch him, the more he reminds me of Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
At Kansas State the last year.
Yeah, definitely.
Paul is in Mississippi. Paul, welcome into the show.
Hey, how you doing, Charles?
Good, Paul.
I had wanted to make a comment. We play back-to-back road games, which is something we don't do very often. Just wanted to get y'all opinion on what y'all think. Maybe that had an effect, especially in the second half. I mean, it looked like they just kind of, like you were saying, they lost interest and maybe got a little bit, you know, flat in the second half after getting out to a big lead. And it's not something we do often is play back-to-back road games, and that's always tough to do. Next year, I know we have both Florida and Arkansas back-to-back on the road, and we end the season with Auburn and A&M back-to-back. Just wanted to get your opinion on it and both you and Rich's opinion on it.
Thanks, Paul. It's a better question for you, Richard, because you've done it before.
No, it's definitely something tough to do, and I think it all depends on which teams you're playing back-to-back. When you have an emotional game like you did against Alabama, you get the first win in 8 years. You have guys carried off the field. You go kind of on a victory lap for a week, and everybody's talking about that big game. It makes it harder to get up for a team that's a below 500 team. And when you go on the road, you want to get out there and start fast. But to me, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I've seen guys where you start slow and finish fast, and you feel good about that. And I'd almost rather that than the way this game went, where you started fast and finished slow.
This is just a complete outside perspective. I think it's easier for the colleges to do than the pros. The colleges don't have to break their routine.
You don't have to break time zones very much. I mean,
no, you don't change time zones very often. You're in class until midday on Friday. You get on the plane, you go. Even if whether you're home or away, you got meetings Friday night, but you're not going through another practice Friday night. The flights are pretty short. It's direct. It's, you know, you don't have to fly commercial or anything like that. Not that the pros do, but if you're the Dolphins and you're playing the Seahawks, this is a different deal. Like the Saints had to do when they went out and played the Rams and then they played the Seahawks. They never came home. at least the colleges don't have to break their routines. It's the same routine every week.
I think it's a lot harder when you go from a number three to an unranked. When you're playing ranked teams, I mean, it doesn't matter. Your focus is on, you're ready to get going. It doesn't matter if it's on the road. I mean, of course, you always want the fans with your back, but your focus is there. I think you lose focus a little bit when, especially in a game like this, when you get up 31-7 that early, you go into halftime. It's hard to say that some guys are not saying, well, what are we doing when we get home? What time do you think the plane's going to land tonight? Your focus changes. And I think in a game like tonight, the lead was so outstanding at halftime that there's definitely focus lost.
Worked out for the equipment guys this time. The guys that drive the truck,
yeah.
They got to stop at the chicken on a stick
I
Chevron.
I saw the picture. They started talking about that Wednesday about getting their chicken on a stick.
Worked out pretty good. They got a picture. They posted it. What I want to know is when those guys, when they got to go to the Rose Bowl in 2 years, I mean, that's a long trip. I mean, they drove the truck to Washington. You remember when they drove the truck to Washington?
They left on Wednesday.
Yeah, okay. So let's see what they come up with. They're going to stop and see the Grand Canyon?
They might.
I mean, it's on the way.
Might as well.
You go see the Grand Canyon. You got a chance to do that.
Worth.
Absolutely. 499-9898 is the number to call us. It's Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
LSU wins it tonight 58-37. 499-9898 is the number to call on the Hooters hotline. Bob is in Easton. Bob, welcome into the show. Bob, Easton where?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. We win by 21 and we're still complaining.
Yeah.
But I'm curious. I was thinking, watching the game tonight, hadn't seen Emory for a while, and I saw him tonight. And I'm just curious, have we already burned his red shirt for this year?
Thanks. Yeah, they did. He's not a guy who's going to be here for 5 years.
Yeah.
The red shirts, I don't want to say the red shirt's dead, but the red shirt for advantage with five-year guys, there's just not a lot of them.
Well, for a guy like anymore. That, I mean, he's a guy that is looking for one hot year and to kind of roll out. And yeah, I think your redshirt rule really helps with offensive linemen and defensive linemen and quarterbacks. For your skill guys like that, you're never going to get one of those type of guys to stay for 4 or 5 years.
It's the fifth year, you know, that's where the redshirt comes into play because you're redshirting that first year so that you can gain that fifth year. Problem is now, we haven't seen over the last 10 years a ton of fifth-year guys, and I think you're going to see less and less because what happens? One of two things. Guys do really well and go pro, or they don't do really well and they transfer. You don't see many guys sticking around for the fifth year anymore. Yeah. It's rare. Which is not to say that you don't redshirt guys if they're not going to play, but the four-game redshirt rule has helped. But I think we're going to see less fifth-year guys and not more.
The only five-year guys I feel like you're going to see consistently going forward is still on the offensive line. It's the one position that gains the most. An 18-year-old offensive lineman versus a 19-year-old offensive lineman is a big deal.
The 23-year-old quarterback is also a big deal. This was a great stat a friend of ours gave us this week. It's easy to look up, but I just would have never thought of it. Joe Burrow is older than Lamar Jackson, okay, by like a month and a half, okay? And Burrow's in his fifth year here, and Jackson's in his second year in the league. And you don't think of it in those terms, but, you know, we just think of they're all young people. But, no, he's actually older than
– I wish I could redshirt every quarterback. And I just think that's one position that gets better with is quarterbacks and offensive linemen. I swear, me and Matt talk about it all the time. We wish you could redshirt that position every year.
I may be about to blow your mind, but did you know that back in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't out of the question to redshirt an entire class?
Yeah.
It was hey, everybody.
They had freshman teams back then.
Well, now that's into the 70s. But in the 80s and 90s, if you had a program that was keeping the attrition level down and attaining a certain level of success, there were coaches that says, we're redshirting everybody. And there were a couple of programs that were so bad that when a new coach came in, see, this is back when you got 5 years. If you got, you're a new coach, you came in, you're like, man, this roster stinks. What we're going to do is we're going to redshirt all of these guys because I've got time. They're not going to fire me in my first, second, or third year. Well, that's no longer the case. So nobody, coaches don't want to redshirt anybody that could possibly help them because they're on the clock. I mean, you got to have a certain amount of job security to do this with a degree of confidence. And the kids don't want to redshirt because they want to play immediately. And if they're doing really well, they want to play and then go to the pros. And if they're not playing, then they want to go somewhere else where they can play. Getting guys to do what some of the fifth-year guys have done, you know, like what Matt Flynn did in 2000. No, it just doesn't. 499-9898 is the number. Tim is in Shreveport. Tim, welcome into the show.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, guys. Doing excellent. Man, I'm so happy that this offense is moving the ball. You look great. Just disappointed, man, in the defensive side, though. I mean, we have stars, man, 4- and 5-star guys who just aren't playing up to their potential. And like Delpit, I mean, all season, I understand that now he may be hurt. But, I mean, from the beginning of the season, he doesn't look like himself. I know he's probably out of position. He should be in the box a little bit more. But, I mean, we just don't look great on defense, man. And I understand, you know, people, you know, we're satisfied we got the win. That's great. But when you're playing championship football, you look at Saban. You know what I'm saying? Whenever those guys are up by 20, 30 points, he's still coaching those guys.
I think they're still – Tim, I think they're still coaching them. Saban's running into the same problems that – Ole Miss put up the same amount, almost the same amount of points. He's put up 6 less points against Alabama as they did against LSU. Saban's got the same issues.
It's a style of offense that we're playing.
Yeah, that's part of it. Now, I'm going to agree with you on Delpit, though. This year has been a
disappointment. Number 7?
No, I don't think that's it. I think you touched on part of it. I think that he had to flip-flop positions with Jacoby
Earlier
Stevens.
Earlier in the season, I felt like he was more out of position. In the last 4 or 5 games, he's been right there, and he's had great games in 3 or 4 of the last 5. Tonight, he just overran a few things. I think tackling from a hole, and I've been a big Patrick Queen guy, it's been more going for the knockout punch than wrapping up, and I've seen more missed tackles that way between those two guys.
And maybe the ankle is bothering him more than he's letting on.
Yeah.
That's certainly possible. He just has not made as many plays as he did a year ago. And a year ago, I thought the guy was the best defensive player in football. I mean, one of the best defensive players in football. I thought he, you know, could have he maybe should have won the Thorpe.
Yeah.
Could have won the Thorpe. Maybe should have won the Thorpe. The part I don't buy into is that he's looking at the professional aspect of it.
Because he's still trying to make money right now. You're not going to say that I'm looking forward. His draft stock has fallen this year. If we're really talking honestly, and that's not something that he's going to say, well, I'm looking forward to it. I just think that maybe at different times he's tried to make plays and was out of position or to me, it's just the way we're scoring at the rate we're scoring. The defense is not going to be as good as we want it to be, and you're going to score more points, and then we're going to start pointing to our superstars on defense.
Who's having a better year, him or Fulton?
Fulton, no question.
Yeah, and you're starting to see this reflected in some of the draft buzz. Before the season, Delpit was looked at as a higher rated of the two. Now I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
I would say that if the draft was tomorrow, I think Fulton would probably go ahead.
I think Fulton's been playing his best ball since – after the 4th game. I mean, we were talking about Stingley all year long, and there's no question he's been phenomenal as a freshman. But if you're watching the games over the last 3 or 4 weeks, Fulton's our best defensive player.
499-9898 is the number. Jim is in Memphis. Jim, welcome into the show.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed the game tonight and certainly enjoyed your covering it and visiting about it afterwards. I did want to make, an extremely important comment that we've all got to keep in mind. We've been recruiting in the way that Alabama's been recruiting in this respect. Alabama's been recruiting for years. You can ask Saban about it. You ask anybody. They've been recruiting to beat LSU. If they get past LSU in the schedule, they can pretty much make the rest of it with Auburn and everybody else included. We've been recruiting more recently, smarter recruiting, to beat Alabama. And guys, you can't stop a Derrick Henry. You can't stop a Najee Harris and you know, stop them with any kind of effectiveness, which we did most of the game against Alabama, and then stop the guys with their scheme tonight. You're right. Rich Rodriguez has done a brilliant job with these little fellas darting all over the field.
Can I ask you, I want you to clarify something because I'm a little bit confused. When you say recruiting to beat LSU or recruiting to beat Alabama, what do you mean by that? Because when I think about recruiting, I think you recruit the best players, and you recruit to you recruit players that fit your schematic, philosophy. And
what you're asking is the schematic philosophy is beat LSU. Well, they've got to recruit to beat LSU, and you're right, they recruit 4- and 5-star players and do all that business. But, guys, they will tell you, I'm talking about if you actually talk to Alabama people who are involved in that, they will tell you they recruit to beat LSU.
Well, they do, but that just means you're recruiting the best players, right? I mean, you can...
No, not just the best, but the best player for that position that defends LSU. And so what they did was they got these defensive linemen. They put a premium on that. They told them, I won't tell you, I don't have any idea how much money anybody's guaranteed at graduation before anything else. But I can tell you that that's the very reason Auburn does the same thing, is because they have to compete against Alabama and everybody else.
Well,
my point is, you can't have a Kristen Fulton or somebody at, you know, just let's throw a number out there, 220-pound safety that's going to tackle these little guys at 5'9", 180 real effectively and be able to play them real. I mean, we could have completely redone our defense. And I'm going to tell you, I think you're right. I think we came out. I think we were a little lax coming out. We thought we had the league. We thought we had the game. But if it were just that, then we would have been able to adjust and stop them. And it took us all the third quarter and part of the fourth quarter to really adjust where we could, actually stop them with any consistency at all. It's just impossible to take two completely different styles of play. We're beating up the defense really badly tonight. And look, everybody who saw the game in person or on TV is disappointed that the defense didn't play better and that we didn't keep our lanes, that we didn't handle our gaps better, that we didn't do all the things that the guys in the first show and you guys have talked about. But the fact of the matter is, you can't do everything every week.
Okay, Jim. I appreciate the call. I gotta move on. I appreciate what you're saying about recruiting to beat the best teams. I don't know that there's anything that, they went out and got a guy and said, well, this guy can help us beat LSU. That doesn't help you beat everybody else.
If you're recruiting to beat LSU, I mean, he's wasted the last 3 years because it's a completely different team, completely different style. And I get what he's saying when you focus here on in Alabama, LSU, it seems like over the last 8 years, whatever it is, this game means more than anything. It's you have to win this game to go forward and get to where you want to go in the season. But, as far as making an excuse to say our players are built to beat Alabama, not to beat Ole Miss, it's just, to me, it was one thing and one thing only is we shut them down in the first half. In the second half, we didn't have the focus. It was more of we've got a 4-touchdown, 3-touchdown lead. It's game's over. It's time to go. And I just don't feel like the intensity was there in the second half.
Yeah, again, I think the best players are the best players. I do remember one time, this was in the NFL, though, where a team actually said, we're drafting a guy because of somebody that's in our division. And it actually affected the Saints. The 2006 NFL draft, the Houston Texans had the first pick, and they took Mario Williams, who was a defensive end out of NC State, over Reggie Bush. And everybody had just assumed that Bush would be the first pick in the draft. And it was Charlie Casserly, I think, was the general manager, said, we're in a division with Peyton Manning. If we can't put pressure on Peyton Manning, we can't win the division. If we don't win the division, we can't advance in the playoffs. We're going to get somebody who can put Peyton Manning on his butt. And so he drafted Mario Williams. And Mario Williams wasn't a bad player. He made a couple of Pro Bowls. He was never, I think they expected him to be Bruce Smith, and he was never that. But that's the only time I've ever said, man, look, we got to stop that guy. The Jets, Bills, and Dolphins are probably trying to find somebody to beat Tom Brady for, 17 years now. So I understand what he's saying. I just don't agree with the wording of it. You go get the best guys. 499-9898 is the number to call. This is Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
LSU wins it tonight by a score of 58-37. Go to 10-0 on the season. Got some questions out of the Bayou Ford huddle. Let's get to that. You've been on huddle watch tonight.
I've been trying my best to keep up with it. You know, and the All one right. thing is, guys are asking us, can Michigan give Ohio State a run for the money in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Especially after the way they played tonight. I mean, I think they really changed the mindset of that offense struggling.
Michigan has been very quietly getting their act together. Everybody's going to focus on them getting run out of the stadium by Wisconsin earlier this year, and the Army game, which they had to hold on for dear life to win. And that's fine. But since the Wisconsin game, okay, blow out Rutgers, beat Iowa, beat Illinois, lose to Penn State when you drop a ball in the end zone, which would have sent it to overtime, blow out Notre Dame, blow out Maryland, okay, Maryland's lousy, blow out Michigan State today. They have scored, other than the Iowa game, no less than 28 points in any of these games, so the offense has gotten better. Patterson threw four touchdown passes today. The last four of the last five games, they've scored 42-21, 45, 38, 44. They're playing reasonable defense. I don't think they're going to beat Ohio State, but I don't think that after they beat Army, what felt like a loss, and then got just thumped by Wisconsin, everybody wrote them off. I was one of them. I was like, oh, man, that looks bad. But since then, they've been getting a little bit better every week, a little bit better every week. They haven't completely bought over into the offensive change. They've kind of gone kicking and screaming. It's a little Miles-esque, but they've been incorporating a little bit more, a little bit more. Patterson gets a little bit more comfortable every week. It's a rivalry game. They've got it at home. I'm going to give them a puncher's chance in that game.
Is this the best Ohio State team you've seen outside of – when was the last time they won a national championship?
The Ezekiel Elliott, Cordell Jones team, which was what, 15?
Yeah.
I think.
It just seems like Ohio State, you know, over the last decade has always had great teams, been 8-0, 7-0, 9-0, and then they have that trip up game. And I just don't feel like this is the team that's had, is going to have that trip up game. It just seems like they're playing way too consistent.
Let me say something about Ohio State that, if anybody that's listening to this show in the South, that's an SEC fan, will take it as a high compliment, and if anybody in the Big Ten heard me say this, they would, you know, throw things at me. They're a Southeastern Conference team that just happens to play in the Big Ten.
I agree with that.
Their talent level across the board is equal or greater to any Southeastern Conference champion in any given year over the last 20, save the Luke Fickell year, okay? What's impressive to me is that they have changed coaches and changed quarterbacks and seemingly gotten better.
Yeah.
Oklahoma did this. They changed coaches, changed quarterbacks. The quarterback won the Heisman. They made it to the playoffs, and it's like, wow, that's a heck of a transition. Ohio State has done
– they did it similar with an in-house coach.
Every bit is good. It's important to remember that the next time there's a coaching search, that you don't necessarily have to go – Now, both of these coaches left voluntarily at Ohio State and Oklahoma. So,
and to me, that's part different. Of what you'd love to see is a coach grooming. When you have a good program, everything's going right, you have a good offense, everything, you're playing to the standard of football that you want for that school. You would hope that coach is grooming a young guy, bringing him up, and it doesn't always happen that way, and it's definitely different with, you know, Coach Orgeron. He wasn't a young guy being groomed. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time. With, you know, Oklahoma and Ohio State, they just happened to have a young guy, an up-and-coming guy in the staff, and it all worked out.
Now, I don't know what happens if Ohio State loses one game, though. They could still end up being in the playoffs. Now, we see this Penn State-Ohio State game in 2 weeks. Well, that's gonna tell a tale on the Big Ten championship
game. It seems like
game.
Ohio State has, you know, their toughest part of the year is coming up. Yeah, they're going to play Penn State. They're going to play Michigan, and this is when they're finally going to be tested.
The opponent on the other side, Minnesota still controls their own destiny. They lost today, but they still control their own destiny. Penn State beats Ohio State, though, and you know they still control their own destiny. So we could there's a different couple of different combinations we could see. Wisconsin is still alive on the other side. So we can see a couple of different combinations in the Big Ten championship game. I only bring it up because an 11-1 Ohio State is going to present the same type of questions that an 11-1 Alabama squad would have presented before the Tua injury. They could still get in. And what that means is you could end up with a Big Ten champion that might conceivably have two losses.
Yeah.
And then what? The thing that sets up now, though, that Baylor has lost and Minnesota has lost, we have put aside the idea that the powerhouse programs in those two leagues would be leapfrogged by an undefeated underdog, Minnesota or Baylor. So now you're going to end up, hopefully, I think, with an 11-1 Oklahoma, an 11-1 Baylor playing for the Big 12 championship, an 11-1 Utah, an 11-1 Oregon playing for the Pac-12 championship. And if that happens, then I think you're going to see conference champions across the board.
Yeah.
Now, that's fine if you win. Now, that's fine if you win the Southeastern Conference Championship. Now, if you lose to Georgia, now, hang on.
That's when it becomes a huge debate.
Maybe I should go back the other way. Maybe now that Alabama's going to probably be taken off the table as far as playoff talk, maybe we should start rooting for all these teams to lose.
Yeah, you can go that way. But I don't know. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I feel after watching, I've watched a good
because they Georgia. Gave up 600 yards tonight.
Yeah, see, I'm not worried about that. I've watched enough Georgia football this year that I think that matchup is.
They're not going to get to 600 yards.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Take a break. Come back. Get you up to date. What's going on in college football? The late games coming down the stretch here. This is Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Game Day, the Snap Fitness College Football Scoreboard. Get fitter faster with Snap Fitness. Visit snapfitness.com or a location near you.
And start you off with games in progress. Oregon thumping Arizona 34-6, getting closer to that one loss versus one loss Pac-12 championship game. 34-6 early fourth quarter. In the third, USC has just tacked on a field goal. They lead Cal 27-10. And number 21, Boise State leads New Mexico 42-3. That's also early in the fourth quarter. Earlier finals, Ohio State, no problem with Rutgers, 56-21. Four touchdown passes for Justin Fields. Number 3, Clemson, 52-3 over Wake Forest. Trevor Lawrence, four touchdowns. Travis Etienne, 121 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Richard, we touched on this in a scoreboard show. If Clemson was having problems early in the year, they're certainly not now. Wake Forest, not a bad team. They were 7-2 coming in, and they completely got boat raced today by Clemson.
Not at all. I mean, I think that was the most dominating game and is the most convincing win you've seen by Clemson all year long. And I think it just comes at a time where everybody's wondering what – type of football team Clemson is, and they're proving their point right now.
It's not their fault that the ACC stinks so bad. If I'm Dan Radakovich, I'm saying, listen, man, not only we won the national championship last year, so you know we can play with all these guys, but we scheduled two SEC teams.
We've been in the playoffs for 5 years in a row now. I mean, they can't help who's on the schedule at that point.
They're still very, very scary and flying under the radar as much as a defending
and
national champion.
And what people aren't
could.
Realizing is the defense this year statistically is better than it was last year with all those first round guys.
They've allowed over 14 points only one time all year. That was the game at North Carolina where they escaped. Number 4, Georgia beat number 12 Auburn 21-14. Bulldogs clinch a spot in the SEC championship game. They're 9-1, 6-1 in the league. Bo Nix threw the ball 50 times today for Auburn. Didn't seem like it. 245 yards and a touchdown. Late rally by Auburn comes up just a little bit short. The one pass that he had inside the 35-yard line going in, a 4th-and-1, a little flip to Harold Joyner. He threw behind him. that kill that drive. Number five, Alabama beat Mississippi State 38-7. You haven't heard by now the big story. Tua Tagovailoa out for the season with a what is considered to be a serious hip injury, not related to the ankle injury that almost kept him out of the LSU game, but a season ender. And there are some long-term long-term ramifications here that I don't want to speculate too much, but they are making comparisons to Bo Jackson's injury. We'll see. But Tagovailoa is scheduled to have surgery either. I think it's either was late tonight or tomorrow. Yeah. So we'll keep.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with quarterback going forward. I mean, the quarterback, the backup, Mac Jones, he played well against Arkansas. I didn't catch the end of this game, but I heard Tua's younger brother got in.
Basically, there was sort of a hush. I watched some of the second half of this game. Sort of a hush over the entire stadium. You could hear, according to the sideline reporter, you could hear Tagovailoa screaming in pain. They took him off on the cart. They brought him to the ambulance. The ambulance brought him to the helicopter. The helicopter brought him to Birmingham. Everybody understood just how serious that it was. To compound a problem for Alabama, they later lost Raquan Davis. They also lost Henry Ruggs. Kylan Hill went out for Mississippi State. The second half, Alabama kicked a field goal, and that was the only scoring. It was very much two teams that looked like their minds were somewhere else, and let's just let the clock run, and let's get out of here. Number seven, Utah thumped UCLA 49-3. Number 20, Iowa beat number 8, Minnesota 23-19. To cut the number of teams from undefeated from 5 to 4. Later that would be cut to 3. Tyler Goodson for Iowa, 94 yards on the ground and a touchdown. As a big play in this game, Minnesota with what would have been a first down by penalty. P.J. Fleck going way out of his way, some 35, 40 yards down the field. To get out there and defend his player, got called for an unsportsmanlike. And
I just felt like this is a time where the coach, you know, the emotions got the best out of him. It was a situation that he's fighting for his player, but, you know, he really hurt his team in the long run by getting out there and voiding a first down.
Yeah, penalties end up offsetting. Number 9, Penn State beat Indiana 34-27. Number 10, Oklahoma dug themselves a 28-3 hole and spent the second half digging themselves out. They beat number 13, Baylor 34-31. Again, only 3 undefeated teams left in the nation now: Clemson, Ohio State, and LSU. Jalen Hurts threw 4 touchdown passes, added another 114 yards on the ground. Number 11, Florida beat Mizzou 23-6. Gators, can I say a quiet 9-2? They were eliminated from contention for the SEC championship game today.
It was a quiet game to start it. I mean, I want to say it was 3-0 through the first quarter. They really didn't get going until the second half.
Kyle Trask threw a couple of touchdown passes. Dan Mullen's going to win like 22 games in his first 2 years at Florida.
Dan Mullen's a pretty damn good coach.
Yes, he is. Number 14, Wisconsin beat Nebraska 37-21. Nebraska needs a win, one win in their last two games. I'm sorry, 2 wins in their final 2 games to get bowl eligible. Number 15, Michigan beat Michigan State 44-10 behind 4 touchdown passes and 384 yards through the air for Shea Patterson. Number 16, Notre Dame, no problems with number 23, Navy. It's been a sticky wicket for the Irish here in the past few years. 52-20, though, no problem today for Notre Dame. 5 touchdown passes for Ian Book. Number 17, Cincinnati beat South Florida 20-17. Number 18, Memphis over Houston 45-27. Iowa State kicked a field goal in the last play of the game to beat number 19, Texas 23-21. Brock Purdy threw for 354 yards on that Texas defense. Supposed to be getting some guys back. Was supposed to be getting healthy today. Longhorns now 6-4 on the season. Number 22, Oklahoma State spoiled Les Miles' return to Stillwater 31-13 Cowboys. West Virginia pulley upset in the Little Apple over number 24 Kansas State 24-20, the final in that one. App State goes to 9-1 with a 56-27 win over Georgia State. Florida State beat Alabama State 49-12. Was TCU over Texas Tech 33-31. Northwestern over UMass 45-6. Northwestern hasn't scored 45 points since Labor Day. Total. UMass really, really bad.
That's tough.
Temple beat Tulane 29-21. BYU over Idaho State 42-10. Arkansas State edged Coastal Carolina 28-27 to get bowl eligible. Virginia Tech beat Georgia Tech 45-0 just when you thought Tech was starting to improve a little bit. Virginia beats Virginia Tech in the finale. It will be seven Coastal teams in 7 years, seven different teams to win the Coastal in the ACC. Yeah, we're talking about parity, right? Kentucky beat Vanderbilt 38-14. It was Syracuse over Duke 49-6. Hawaii beat UNLV 21-7. Utah State got bowl eligible today 26-21 over Wyoming. Washington State beat Stanford 49-22. Rice got their first win of the season. They beat Middle Tennessee 31-28. UL Lafayette over South Alabama 37-27. Cajuns now 8-2 on the year, 5-1 in the Sun Belt. Southern Miss beat Texas San Antonio 36-17. Texas A&M over South Carolina 30-6. Kellen Mond threw for 221 and a touchdown. Cordarian Richard had 130 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Louisville got bowl eligible today. They beat NC State 34-20. Oregon State edged Arizona State 35-34. Southern University, a winner today over Jackson State. The final score in that one has gone blank on my screen. Come on now. Don't die on me just yet, man. We almost ended the show. 40-34. Southern beat Jackson State, and Grambling over Mississippi Valley 40-0. And that is your college football scoreboard. Back with a stat check next. Eagle 98.1 game day.
Eagle 98.1 game day. Stat check. Presented by Cox Business. Cox Business has fast, reliable internet that's backed by the 24/7 support of Perfect Plan identifiers, expert listeners, and flexible installers. Expect more. Switch today at coxbusiness.com.
Let's get to that point in the night where, you know, different topics come up during the breaks. We're going right past the LSU defense into to wine snobs. I should probably read these stats. LSU 35 first downs tonight. Ole Miss 26 net yards rushing. Yikes. 402.
Did you have to read this?
Yeah, it's just part of the program here. 44 carries for 402 yards, 9.1 yards per rush.
When you have two running backs, or two, not necessarily running backs, but you had two ball carriers with over 10 carries that averaged 10 yards a rush.
I can't no, that I mean, I, it would be that doggone Arkansas
yeah,
game, maybe
with Felix and
Jones
yeah.
and McFadden, maybe 39 attempts for LSU, 225, 5.8 on the ground. Net yards passing, LSU 489, Ole Miss 212. Total offensive yards, 1,328 for the two teams combined.
Do you remember to start this season at Texas when they got over 1,000? We're like, yeah, this is crazy. When does this happen?
1,300 yards in regulation.
Yes.
1,328 yards in regulation. Anyway, 81 plays for LSU, 714 yards. 71 plays for Ole Miss, 614 yards. You go, they got a bye next week. Well, they got like a mini bye. They play on Thanksgiving night. You got to be on the field defensively for 81 snaps. You know, they were gassed at the end. Yeah. Clyde's last touchdown run, I don't think he was touched. But for LSU, they gotta go play next week. Now it's Arkansas, I get it, but still, man, you gotta be tired. That's a lot of plays.
No doubt.
8.8 average yards per play for LSU, 8.6 for Ole Miss. Referees kept their flags in the pockets tonight for the most part. 4 on the Tigers for 35, 5 on the Rebels for 50. Third down conversions, LSU 7 out of 12, Ole Miss 2 out of 11. How do you go 2 out of 11 on third down and still get 614 yards?
Well, when you have a 60-yard rushing touchdown, a 40-yard rushing touchdown, a 38-yard rushing touchdown, it adds up quick.
But they only had one less third down than LSU.
I feel like all these yards were on five plays.
Yeah, I guess. They were 1-4 on fourth down.
Find the breakdown on Plumlee's touchdowns, and you're going to get half their yards.
Possession time, 32-51 for LSU, 27-09 for Ole Miss. You know, if I'd just been handed this and not seen this game, I would go watch this game just to see how the hell it unfolded, you know, with these numbers that we're giving you. Individually, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 23 carries for 172 yards and a touchdown. Joe Burrow added 9 carries for 15 yards. Take out the three sacks for 26 yards. John Rhys Plumlee, 21 carries, 212 yards, and four. He wasn't sacked tonight. Four touchdowns on the ground. Jerrion Ealy, 13 carries for 141 yards, and Snoop Connor added 45 more on the ground just for good measure. Burrow, 32 of 42, 489 yards, five touchdowns, two interceptions, three sacks. Plumlee, 9 of 16, 123 yards, an interception, no touchdowns. And Matt Corral, 6 of 11 for 89 yards and a touchdown. Justin Jefferson with 9 catches, 112 yards and 2 touchdowns. Jamar Chase, 8 catches, 227 yards and 3 touchdowns.
That's over 1,000.
Thaddeus Moss tied you tonight for receptions by tight end. By the way, Burrow's went over the career passing yardage for a season. Mark Helbig, Ronnie David.
Burrow's record, and then you had the duo of
Jefferson and Chase, the most prolific receiving duo in LSU history. Now, plus the consecutive completions record. Burrow got that one.
And Chase tonight. Getting the touchdown record.
Chase got the single-season touchdown record.
Seems like we're talking about all these records broken tonight, and we've still had issues.
Yeah, none of them were on defense. Elijah Moore, 9 catches, 143 yards, and a touchdown for Ole Miss. What do you think Von Rosenberg spent the night doing? I know what he didn't do.
He was very relaxed.
He didn't punt. not once.
Probably stretching all game long.
You know, you can go visit with, like, the fans in the stands, you know, right behind there. Maybe he went to get the chicken on a stick.
That's exactly what
They sent
what
him
happened.
Off to the Chevron. Defensively, Jacob Phillips, 11 tackles tonight. Jacoby Stevens, Patrick Queen with 9 apiece. LSU had 5 tackles for a loss. And an interception that was by Kerry Vincent for Ole Miss. Jalen Julius, 9 tackles. Willie Hibbler also with 9 tackles. They had 5 tackles for loss for 19 yards. A forced fumble and 2 interceptions of Joe Burrow. Which is the first time he's done that this year. And that is your stat check.
You know the question that I wish we'd ask Gordy and I forgot? I was shocked, and I was talking to you about it, when Kerry Vincent came back into the game.
Yeah.
I thought he just wasn't going to play tonight, and all of a sudden it's like number 5 gets an interception. I was like, I didn't realize he was playing tonight.
You get one of those first quarter penalties or something like that?
I don't know. I mean,
they usually don't do that here. They do that other places where you can't start, but you can go in a game
usually
later.
It's kind of known.
It's a disciplinary thing.
The disciplinary deal is they're going to make it known. It's kind of an embarrassment deal. You're not playing the first quarter or the first half. Right. For me, it was. I don't know if they had another injury or somebody was getting beat, and they were like,
he looked healthy.
He looked good. Yeah. Got his interception.
Take a break, come back, and wrap things. Game Balls is next. Eagle 98.1 Game Day.
Eagle 98.1 Game Day. Game Balls. Presented by Baton Rouge Metro Airport. Baton Rouge Metro Airport. It's about time.
All right, you're first.
I'm going Game Balls with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He got to 176. Past 140, we're going to find out why that 140 was big later on.
I think that's a good idea. At 22 yards through the air on 4 catches.
And I'm going to go with Cade York, you know, hitting a 52-yard career long. I think he's a guy that everybody was questioning a couple weeks ago, and he started to make some big kicks.
30 good from 27, 33, and 52 yards tonight, missed from 48, and was perfect on his extra points, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're omitting the defense tonight, and we're going to special teams, so we're working a little bit here because LSU had no – you took York. That's fine. I'm going to take Jamar Chase. Hang on. 8 catches, 227, 3 touchdowns, the single-season leader in touchdown catches now for LSU. And my other game ball, since we're omitting the defense, I'm going Avery Atkins. We're starting to worry about this guy's leg a little bit because he's getting tired.
He might need some rest.
11 kickoffs tonight, and 8 of them were touchbacks. One of them – was the pooch kick at the end of the first half, which was he wasn't trying to kick out of the end zone. He's got to be getting tired, right?
Sore hip.
662 yards worth of kickoffs. I mean,
guys got more yardage and kickoffs.
If this was like pitchers, we'd be talking about pitch count. Yeah. I mean, this guy's got to ice his leg, right?
He's getting close to it.
I would imagine he's been a little bit tired. 11 kickoffs tonight.
I thought you were going to go Von Rosenberg, because remember when we gave
award?
We gave Stingley the game ball
for not
one
being
time
thrown
for,
at
for not having a stat.
Gotcha. But see, Stingley, that night.
He had to produce to
contributed.
Not get his
tag. Yeah. Von Rosenberg just Von Ver. Let's see. He got they left yesterday midday, so he got a free flight there, a free flight back, a free hotel room,
free steak.
How many times did they feed him? Twice yesterday and three times today.
The big one is the night you get the steak the night before.
He got a very good view of the game, and he did nothing for any of that stuff. I mean, didn't even set foot on the field.
This guy had the best night.
This guy did. I mean, they went through all that trouble for him to go all the way to Oxford to warm up. What a freeloader.
Hey, look, I wish I could be him.
58-37, LSU wins it tonight. Back to wrap it up, Eagle 98.1 game day.
Eagle 98.1 game day, presented by your local Super Chevy dealers.
Happy birthday, by the way.
I appreciate it.
Yeoman's job for, you know, starting your birthday here with us. Musso, you know, brought cake and everything, and we haven't had a chance yet. But
I hadn't seen the cake.
No. It's a surprise. We're waiting to the end.
Yeah. I will take a win for my birthday. I mean, every single year. If we can win on my birthday every year, I'm good.
Well, let's move the Alabama game to your your week. Normal week, LSU and Arkansas at 6 o'clock next week at Tiger Stadium. The Ed Orgeron press conference on ESPN Radio 1210 on Monday. Ed Orgeron show on Wednesday night, 7 o'clock from TJ Ribs, followed by the Tiger Zone from LaBerge, and then Eagle 98.1 game day at 1 o'clock. Next Saturday, we'll find out on Monday time for LSU and Texas A&M. We are thinking that this is a really good chance that it is going to be a night game. Final score, once again, LSU 58 and Ole Miss 37. Now for Richard Dixon, for Musso, for Nate, I'm Charles Haniger saying thank you and good evening. This has been Eagle 98.1 Game Day.